Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director at cybered.io. And on today's podcast, we're delighted to have Ted Gutierrez, who is the CEO and co-founder of SecurityGate. They are a provider of market-leading SaaS platform for OT cyber improvement, and he is committed to protecting what matters across operational sectors by helping to align industrial cyber teams on their improvement journey. Ted's background is extensive in compliance and risk audit and management for critical infrastructure, and he knows well the pain associated with effectively maturing organizational resilience in a decentralized ecosystem. Ted's a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, battle-hardened veteran of the U.S. Army, and a seasoned recon and surveillance expert. So welcome, Ted. I'm glad you could join us today.
I appreciate it, Steve. You didn't have to tell the whole background, but it's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be part of this podcast, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, sure. So why don't we start with the SEC and the most recent regulations and the impact that you see that they may well have on the critical infrastructure space.
Yeah, it's a big topic right now. You know, I actually, on my Business of Cyber podcast, talked about what we anticipated as the SEC's ruling on having some level of cyber component. And what was funny is that I think we did like a LinkedIn audio event, and almost a week later, they had come out with the actual guidance. So, you know, from my perspective, SecurityGate talks with CISOs, CIOs, P&L leaders, really the strategic folks that set budgets, they set direction. And I think these folks are only going to get more resources long term. I just don't know how it's all going to fade out or play out. It's definitely giving more teeth, if you will, to the idea that cybersecurity is a business problem. It's a business challenge. It's giving more, it's making the CISO and the CIO role even more important. And I think it's bringing an element of cybersecurity to the boardroom. And so it'll be interesting to see how it's implemented, how it rolls out. But for right now, you know, I think a lot of CISOs and CIOs are taking positive action to get ahead of this, especially at least in the publicly owned company realm.
Yeah, well, there's opinion on both sides of this regulation. You know, 4 days for a reporting of a quote material quote incident is aggressive. A lot of folks think it's very hard to make that kind of determination within that period of time. And so, you know, from a IT versus OT kind of point of view, what are your thoughts? I mean, does one side or the other have a easier task in determining materiality? Or is that requirement even reasonable from the get-go?
It's a good question, a good couple questions. So, as far as timeline, right, I think there's going to be a lot of, I wouldn't say the word litigation, but I do think there will be some collective collaboration over the next couple of years of, you know, when did we find out and when did we make the decision to communicate? I don't have an issue with 4 days. I have an issue probably with companies having the infrastructure set up to be able to really confirm within that first 24, 48, 72 hours. Whether this is a real material, you know, let's not use the word breach, but does it really materially affect? So I think what that type of requirement or bullet point does to a given organization is it forces the security leadership to beg the question, hey guys, can we please define so that I can be the watchdog of this, what a real material impact is to the business? And so the one positive that I see from this guidance and this guideline that's being pushed down, or this mandate rather, is that it forces the conversation about cybersecurity to incorporate a business side. I've been saying that all year long, that there aren't enough resources within the critical infrastructure sectors, and so we've got to use them more wisely. And the way to do that is you've got to correlate your cyber investments specifically to business outcomes. This SEC ruling does that in a lot of ways, and it helps push because it forces the business leaders to start telling the cyber leaders, these are all the top 15 business impacts that would be, you know, adversely affect our stock price, adversely affect our operations, adversely affect our P&L. And once they know that, I think that helps cyber leaders a lot, because what it does is it says, okay, well, if those are the 15 business outcomes we're trying to avoid, what are the myriad of compensating controls and defenses that we layer up to make sure that that doesn't happen? So I think in that side of the equation, I think it really helps. To answer your other part of your question, you know, is IT more involved than OT? Unsure. It really depends on the organizational structure. I see a lot of companies that still don't have a lot of resources on the OT side. So in those cases, I think it's going to fall on an IT person and probably an operational or an automations expert to say, hey, look, we, you know, this screen is down. We're going to have to shut something down. And so it'll be a little confusing, the data transfer between those two parties. For some organizations that do have OT and IT security roles really defined, I think it'll be volleying the question back and forth of whose responsibility starts and ends where, and then the reporting from there. So I think it is as much of a question about the organizational hierarchy as it is kind of OT and IT, at least at this point, Steve. But overall, I think with the right organizational push from the top, I don't think there's any reason that a given organization, given the right resources, should be able to say, hey, there's a material impact within 4 days, regardless of the size of the side it comes from.
Yeah, well, certainly if you're MGM Grand or Caesars, you knew immediately that you had a material impact. But if you're a SolarWinds victim, for example, you know, when do you decide that exfiltration of data that's been going on for a month? I mean, when does that become reportable as a material impact?
Yeah, it's a big question. I think it begs, hey, what's the impact of this long term, or what are the potential impacts? And I think that's where we're going to start to see some element of refinement to the overall definitions. I think the definitions are generally nebulous in version one by design. And I think that you're going to see some real strong leadership come out from various companies that make a filing and say, hey, look, this happened. And whether or not it affects stock prices over the course of the next day, week, quarter, I think that's going to be the real tell. It'll be interesting to see if people use this almost in a transactional capacity that says, hey, this happened, here's the impact, and here's the report. Or if they do it somewhat in a kind of transitional capacity where they say, hey, look, we don't really know what's happening, but we know this happened. Here's all the actions that we're taking to protect it. And the hope would be that industries choose the latter. They look at this as a mechanism for being transparent. They look at cyber attacks as in an offensive mentality that says everybody was subject to being hit at some point in their future. So how we manage it and how we start articulating, you know, cyber attacks in the news rather than clickbait, it's more so just like any other incident would be viewed. So not to take the show away from safety, but if you think about an auto shop or an auto plant or manufacturing plant being shut down from a fire, you think about it from a potential safety hazard that they decided to shut the plant down because of a safety hazard. They had to shut down the plant because of a fire. They chose to shut down the plant because of a cyber attack. The real question that I offered in the industry is, these are all very realistic scenarios. How are they going to be viewed by the investor world? How are they going to be viewed how they can affect the P&L? And I think that we owe it to the cyber leaders of the world out there to enable them to make changes to operations if necessary as a precautionary issue. And right now, I'm not sure that the media, I'm not sure that the world is ready to accept that. I think you still have kind of that clickbait fear that says so-and-so company was hacked. What are we going to do? Stock price goes down. So it's a really dynamic situation that I think public companies are in right now. And I think the real underlying question that leadership has on their shoulders is, are we going to treat cyber attack as its own, you know, body of risk? Are we going to kind of put it together with safety? Are we going to put it together with environmental? Are we going to put it together with even weather, you know, people shut down facilities all the time for weather, and somehow the P&L still makes it work. So it'll be interesting to see how much negative press the first 10 to 15 of these disclosures create in the industry. And I think that's going to be pretty much a leading indicator of how people view this SEC ruling.
Yeah, sure. And if I'm a shareholder, I'm going to be disinclined to hang on to stock of a company that tells me that something's going on. They're not sure what it is, but they're on it. You know what I mean? The uncertainty is not part of my investment thesis, and probably not part of most people's. And so I think that's a dangerous response. And I think companies will, for the most part, kind of avoid that path if they can, which raises another kind of series of questions too, right? I mean, two of the difficulties with this ruling from my point of view are, one, it alerts the bad guys, if you will, the adversarial community, that a company was hacked, and it defines exactly what the threat vector was and what the breach looked like. And then secondly, there's no public-private protection here. While it's supposed to be public company only reporting, my understanding is that if you're a third party and you're part of the supply chain, no matter how big you are, if you're a private company suddenly and you're part of that breach chain story, suddenly you're also went public within 4 days too. And neither of those two things seem like they're advancing the cause here in my mind.
It'll be interesting on the supply chain. I can't comment just yet on that. The connected element of our world, it lends to that there are going to be a lot of connected devices. There's going to be a lot of different service companies. There's going to be a lot of different hardware but I think that the asset owner, I'm in the critical spaces, right? We call it asset owner. You know, the hospital, the bank, the oil company, the rig company. I mean, these are all, it doesn't matter where, what side of the company the breach or the material issue occurred, it's still going to be carried by the big company, whoever owns the most risk and responsibility. You know, going back to something you said previously, I think that it's probably too early to tell whether investors, I don't think investors are going to reward stock prices. They're not going to reward companies for getting hacked. I think that there's going to be some people that buy the dip without a doubt, the same way that back to my original kind of comment, if there's a strike somewhere in the world and that causes an auto worker group to shut down production, I'm not sure that the stock price is going to fall at a positively correlated rate with the impact of that strike. Maybe it's going to be different for cyber. Maybe if someone releases that they had a cyber attack and they don't know how wide it went, they're ahead of it, they're trying to be ahead of it, we could see stock prices fall like crazy. I think it's really going to come down to the material impact that organization had. Right now, I've seen a couple reports where we're experiencing an outage, but we don't have any details of it. People can't make decisions on that, right? It'll have to wait till the next quarterly report on their profits and loss to really kind of dictate what I think the market's going to do. What I do see happening, and I think there's probably a business model here for somebody, is somebody will try to predict the financial impact of an outage. It's extremely hard to do when you look at, you know, files or you look at data. You know, it's not as hard when you look at barrels of oil being pumped, right? When it's number of cars that are not being out. So I think that there will be some effects on the market in 3 to 4 quarters by running some analysis of what happened to the stock to the various companies that did, you know, formally indicate that they had seen a material impact. But it's going to be too early to tell, too early to tell right now.
Okay. The comment you made earlier about, you know, kind of throwing cybersecurity in with the weather, environmental, fire kinds of risks when you're the expert in enterprise risk management. Don't you think that a big part of this problem is that cybersecurity is poorly understood, is always increasing in complexity, and as a consequence, people are unable to kind of work out any kind of math, if you will, or any kind of calculus around how to evaluate that risk?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. There's a lot of companies out there that are working on products and intellectual property that will calculate the true cost of a cyber attack, and I think that's really tough to do. It's really tough to do because the data sets that they're using very rarely incorporate real true blue business data. I think it's really easy to do on the fines side. So in Europe, we see with a new directive that's coming down and active in October, you can actually be fined a certain percentage of your P&L. Okay, that's pretty fair, pretty easy to understand. If you're in the banking or the retail or in the healthcare side, you know, there's fines associated with privacy and regulatory standards that have been out for a long time. I think it becomes increasingly difficult to calculate the cost of a cyber attack when what your company does is generally difficult, right? In the critical sectors, moving clean water, moving, you know, natural gas safely, transporting a vessel from here to the other side of the world, it becomes increasingly challenging because what you see is you see a lot of supply chain elements, a lot of trading of hands, a lot of varied operations. And so it becomes more challenging the more diverse your company is. So in a lot of ways, the more different types of revenue models that you have, so two increases in a positive rate, the level of complexity it takes for cyber. On the flip side of that, Steve, is I think that cyber is overcomplicated. I really do. I think that people maybe don't understand cybersecurity because they've never really tried to or had the opportunity to look at it. And as a result, there's a lot of negative assumptions or belief systems that cyber is this black box and I don't understand it. One of the number one ways that people experience a negative outcome as related to cyber generally starts with a people challenge. So let's call it phishing. I would tell you that somebody with HR experience, somebody with customer facing experience is probably as well qualified to prevent a spear phishing or social engineering campaign as somebody who's in the cyber world who has traditionally dealt with firewalls and encryption. So I think we owe it to ourselves as a collective sector to change the mindset about cybersecurity is too technical. And as a result, I don't know how to quantify anything and attack it from a different angle. It says cybersecurity is the outcome, the negative outcome of cybersecurity is the same negative outcome as safety or as a plant shutting down or as, you know, something being robbed. And if you approach it like that and you try to simplify it, I think this SEC guideline may force companies to start thinking of cybersecurity more as a business problem rather than some technical problem. But we're a long way from that.
Yeah, no, your point's spot on, and I agree. You had said when we started this conversation that you hoped, I think, or expected that boards of directors would incorporate a, you know, structure that includes senior stakeholders in cyber risk management. And I agree, this has been going on for way too long. Do you think it'll make a difference? Do you think that we'll actually see people in board positions who can provide some influence from a background in understanding cyber risk?
I hope so. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny. I have a lot of opinions on investment in the space. I have a lot of opinions on training and available skill sets in the space. I think we overthink it too much in cybersecurity and we drastically overshoot it, you know, where somebody may say, I can reduce our risk by X amount percentage because I'm going to implement all 10 of these controls in 1 year. I haven't met a single cyber leader who's been able to implement their project roadmap effectively year over year. They usually overbite, and it'll be interesting to see over the course of the next two decades, how cybersecurity becomes a little bit more less of an alert button and a little bit more of a marathon mentality for resource allocation. You know, when people think about how they pay taxes, you know, and they think about the consultants that they use in their business to pay taxes or to run through the financials. When they think about lawyers and the risk of being sued or the risk of litigation, you know, there's just not as many alarm buttons and fire buttons that you push. Cybersecurity is still in that phase where non-technical people don't really understand it. And it'll take a couple cycles for them to recognize that cybersecurity is just another business enabler. You know, in a lot of ways, automation, digitization, movement to the cloud, scale, efficiency. There's a ton of things that technology brings us. I think a very few people 10 years ago were correlating digitization and automation and all the things it can do along with the additional entry points for some sort of hacker. Okay. I think 10 years from now, people are going to start asking themselves, you know, do I have the foundation of cybersecurity established so that I can bring in new applications, so that I can bring in new people to my organization? So I think it's a step in the right direction. I think the people who have the largest responsibility right now, really the big miss or the big three-pointer, right, is going to be how do the security and risk management leaders that are actually telling the story to their non-technical leaders. Those are the people we got to wrap our arms around right now. Those are the people we have to empower. Those are the people that we got to watch because I think that how a CISO or a CIO is reporting to the board forever paints a picture in that non-technical leader's mind of what maybe cyber risk should look like. And I don't think there's a product on the market, nor will there be, that, you know, you click this button and it's all okay. I don't think there's a positive correlation with the amount of money you spend and how secure you are. I do think that leaders have to be very thoughtful about their resource allocation. And yes, there probably is an argument that resources are going to increase, maybe a little bit, but it's just going to come from somewhere else. And so I think that with the global macroeconomic picture that we see right now, the uncertainty that's out there, the interest rates that are really high, there's not enough dollars circulating for us to just create endless amounts of resources for cybersecurity. So I think the best CISOs right now are the ones that recognize this is a moment in time where I can really get the board and I can get all the resources I need, but I've got to connect these cyber risks to business outcomes. And that takes us back to the very first topic that we talked about, Steve. It's like, is this, you know, who's gonna determine what a material impact is to the company? Well, that's the job. I think the CIO and the CISO's job is gonna become far more business oriented, and it will outsource or decentralize more the technical side of the house than it has been in the past. And that's because non-technical people need a layer of translation. And I believe it falls on the experienced security leaders of today to teach them.
I agree 100%. We're part of our challenge there is that, you know, we're just not very good at this stuff. And so some people pay some lip service to the idea that, yeah, we should be doing all of that. But at the end of the day, I know very few CISOs who are board capable. And by that, I mean, can have a business conversation with a board of directors that places them at the same level in terms of considerations for the elements of the discussion that the rest of those people around that board have as their, you know, their day-to-day job. And boards spend their lives making risk decisions, and you know that's part of the job. But cybersecurity folks do not, and so it's always been curious to me how where enterprise risk management kind of got lost over the years. It feels like to me in that equation. You've been at this a long time. What are your thoughts about whether that occurred? I mean, maybe you have a different view, but if it did, how'd that happen?
Well, I tend to agree with your perspective that the majority of security and risk management leaders are probably not ready tomorrow to go present to a board. I think there's a lot of new products on the market that are saying, we'll make you board ready, which I think there's some elements of that, right? So, and I'm one of them, right? I believe in the simplification of visualization of cyber controls, cyber risks, cyber impacts. And so the more simple you can make it, the bigger impact you can have by talking to people that maybe are not technically qualified. I think that we've asked our security leaders for many, many years, decades, to lock things down, to make sure that they don't change, to keep the things always running, to make sure 100% uptime. And so their whole world has been about connectivity and security and architecture. When you start asking highly technical or usually data-oriented personnel, generally early adopters that like to try technology and try new things. I mean, I'm putting a very big circle over what is probably a diverse persona, but if we just said, hey, look, the mass majority of security leaders in the last 20 years have been very data-oriented. They've been very process-oriented, and they're zeros and ones kind of people. Does this work? Does this not? Is it patched? Is it not? Is that firewall configured right? Is it not? Because the layers of cybersecurity require the foundations to be such. When you start asking them to get into a theoretical conversation about risk and to define material impacts and to translate highly technical control states to business impact, we have a serious knowledge gap on our hands. I think there has been far too much investment, far, far, far too much investment in the last decade in highly technical solutions and not enough on the training of people of how to have that conversation. So I will always kind of lean on the security and risk management leader, put my arm around him or her and say, hey, look, you've got a lot on your plate right now. I think we need to be thinking about those people. What we see is in every nook and cranny across the globe, we see more regulation being pushed down to them. So the tool that boards of directors are going to use is they're going to audit more. They're probably going to call a big four and say, come audit. That's going to take up tons of time. There are not enough qualified people in any of the cybersecurity roles in any of the sectors. So they're not able to lean on their own team. And now product pricing in general, based on venture capital investment over the course of the last 10 years, has grown astronomically high. Yet the budget resources, the people resources, and the time resources available to a CISO haven't changed or they've gone down. So yeah, I'm with you. I think we're asking a lot of these security and risk management leaders. I remember when I was in Iraq, we were transitioning from a war-fighting state to a, I wouldn't call it nation building, but we were tasked to train the Iraqi army and the Iraqi police. It is very hard to take people who you've been training to be warfighters for a long time and turn them into nation builders. And I think the same applies to the world of cybersecurity. Security people are very different than risk people, just like auditing and assessment people are different. So that's my rant for the day, Steve. I hope it helps, and I hope the audience appreciates my perspective. I think there's not enough resources out there, and we've got to be really patient with these select few security and risk management leaders. Their tenure is going down. The time and role is going down. The cyclical nature of this role is that people are jumping out of it sooner than previously because there's so much stress. We don't see an increase in their overall base or incentive program pay. And I think we've got to be careful to take care of these folks and to build new ones behind them so that tomorrow's cybersecurity leaders really know what they're getting into and they've got the tools to succeed.
That was a great rant. And on that, I think we'll end the episode here. But Ted, you're a very thoughtful guy. It was great talking with you. I'd love to have you on a panel, which we do quite a bit of. So if you don't mind,
it'd be my pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. It would certainly be helpful. And also, I want to give you just a quick opportunity to tell us about when you guys are brought in. You guys mean SecurityGate. What is a company looking to achieve?
Yeah, you know, SecurityGate was a SaaS company born out of a wish that I had when I was at a major operator and I was doing assessments and audits globally. I always used to use Excel, but I would assess whether controls existed, and then I'd have to try to visualize it to engineers to help them make better decisions about their risk management. I just kind of knew that there had to be a better way. So companies that look to SecurityGate SaaS platform are usually in a transition from one state of their risk and their maturity to the next. Some people just looking to conduct assessments across a wide a wide array of facilities, and then others are looking to automate and decentralize their overall risk management process. So if they're looking to scale their assessment and the decisions they make based on what the assessments tell them, and they haven't been able to do that themselves, or they're looking to move away from consultants or move to their own native system, then SecurityGate's an option for them to help scale it out. So connecting those business outcomes to your cyber investments, whether it's on the people, process, or technology side, it requires a couple different layers of data. We figured out some really proprietary ways to do that. So now folks that are looking to change their views and alongside their maturity, those are the folks that that tend to enjoy collaborating with us the most.
That sounds great. Thank you, Ted. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope that our audience has enjoyed it as much as we did.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks, Steve. Have a wonderful day.
Yep, you too. And until next time, this is Steve King, your host, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.